The author of a controversial report on sexual discrimination and harassment in the Defence Forces has called on the Army to lift its own embargo on the release of his findings. But as yet, there's been no formal response from the Defence Forces or from the Department of Defence.
Captain Tom Clonan was an Army man through and through. At 24, he joined the prestigious Artillery Corps, serving in Lebanon and the former Yugoslavia. At 31, he was made a captain and brought back to work for the Chief of Staff as press officer. He was also researching a doctoral thesis on the experience of women in the Irish Defence Forces. And in the spring of 1999, Tom Clonan had a choice to make.
As I was interviewing women, issues around bullying, harassment of a physical nature, of a threatening nature, but also of an explicitly sexual nature, began to crop up again and again and again. And I thought that I had stumbled across an anomalous series of interviewees who had had these extraordinary experiences. But as time went on, of the 60 women I interviewed for my doctoral thesis in the Defence Forces, 59 out of the 60 reported some form of bullying or harassment. And the full spectrum of allegations were there. Remarks of an inappropriate nature, remarks of an explicitly sexual nature, touching, sexual assault, and up to and including allegations of attempted rape within the organisation. And typically the women were absolutely incandescent with anger at what had happened to them. So I was very much taken aback because I'd never been bullied. As a male officer, I had never been sexually assaulted or sexually harassed. So therefore, I presumed that these phenomena in the workplace did not exist. And again, it was only from talking to the women themselves and they began to tell me their stories that it dawned on me, the sudden realisation, this does exist and it is a major problem for the Defence Forces and it really needs to be dealt with. I suppose I was also very disappointed that in the vast majority of cases of allegations of sexual assault or sexual harassment, the female soldiers I spoke to had actually, made official complaints. And that in the vast majority of cases, they felt that it wasn't properly investigated or that they weren't taken seriously or that they were subject afterwards to isolation and hostile scrutiny.
In November 2000, when he had completed the thesis, Clonan briefed his superiors on his surprising findings and asked to present them formally to the newly appointed Chief of Staff. He was told to wait a few months until the new man had settled in. That same month, as planned, Clonan retired from the Defence Forces to pursue an academic career. He started a job lecturing at the Institute of Technology in Tallaght.
I was shocked to come across this information. And I also presumed that my fellow officers and the military authorities in particular would share my indignation. And I was confident that when I reported my findings to my superiors, I was confident that they would act on it immediately. And, to be honest with you, with hindsight now, I was quite naive. I actually thought I would get, a major pat on the back for coming across this level of wrongdoing within the workplace. I was sure that this would not compromise my career in any way, that I felt that this would be greeted in an entirely positive manner. This was the Defence Forces. It was their own study. The military authorities facilitated me in every way that was possible at the time. The Chief of Staff personally gave me his explicit written permission to conduct this research. So I felt there was an opportunity there for the military authorities to deal with this issue. So towards the end of January of 2001, I got a phone call from this officer in particular who I had requested to make my presentation, and he said, "Right, Tom, the Chief of Staff, we want to see you in Defence Forces headquarters to discuss a very important matter." And I thought to myself, right, this is it. Now is my opportunity to make my formal presentation. So I went into Defence Forces headquarters in February of 2001. I remember driving in to Park Gate Street, and the guys on the gate still remembered me, so they waved me straight in. And I remember actually, there's special VIP parking at the front of the building. And normally, when I was still in the army, I would have been relegated to the lower car park. So I was cheeky and I actually parked up beside where the Chief of Staff's car might have been. And I felt I was a VIP in some sense going in to make my presentation. I went in, I got my lift up to the fourth floor, and I met this senior officer, and I said to him, right, I have my presentation ready about women in the Defence Forces. And I was absolutely shocked by his response. He looked at me and said, not the fucking women thing. You're not still going on about that. And basically what he said to me was they were not interested in my research or its findings, and that I was no longer a member of the organisation, and that I had nothing, no insights to offer that they were even remotely interested in. But I was also surprised at the, if you like, the level of the rebuttal. I was very forcibly and in no uncertain terms told that they were not interested in my research on women in the army. And in fact, the phrase that was used as I left and it resounded in my ears was, "Clonan, you're full of shit." And that was the response that I received. I didn't get a chance even to open my bag. And I was walked back to the lift. I got out, I got into my car, and I drove out down onto Parkgate Street, and it was, as usual, very heavy traffic on the quays. And as I sat there in the car in heavy traffic, it was the first time since I'd begun the research over 4 years prior to that, I began to get worried about what the implications for me might be. Because the level of animosity towards me and the forcible way in which I was rebutted, again, you know, having been very much at the heart of the organisation, I was very puzzled by it, and I began to get very, very worried about, you know, how I ought to proceed. And I began to wonder, you know, what was going to become of the research and what was going to happen? You know, was the bullying and harassment, was it going to be ongoing within the Defence Forces? Was nothing going to be done? And I didn't know who to turn to or where to look for advice at that point.
When they had originally agreed to support Clonan's research, Defence Forces Headquarters, or DFHQ, attached an important condition. The results were to be published for academic purposes only. Clonan would not be allowed to publish the results as a book or in the media. But almost a year after it had been lodged in the DCU library, Declan Power, a former soldier who is now a journalist, heard about the research from a female soldier.
We were in a friend's house, myself, my wife, and my phone rang. And I spoke to Declan, you know, for about a half an hour on the phone. And he asked me a lot of questions about, you know, the level of allegations and, you know, the spectrum of abuse that was experienced by women. Now, at the time, Declan was also completing an MPhil in DCU, in Dublin City University. And he was also lecturing part-time there. So he had full access to my doctoral thesis in DCU at that time. So he said, listen, I'm going to check this out and I'll get back to you. And I knew at that point that the story was going to get into the wider public domain. So one of the first things I did was to make contact with my former colleagues at Defence Forces Headquarters and alert them and say, listen, you've got to take some action on it. You've got to prepare yourself for this. And I made lots of suggestions. I said, look, it's your own research, it's your own study. You've an opportunity here now to actually pursue this agenda. But again, at the time, I was told, forget about it. A, it's about women, therefore it's not important. And B, nobody reads the Sunday World, which I thought was quite an extraordinary observation to make, given that it was one of the largest selling national newspapers at the time. Anyhow, it ran in the Sunday World on the 5th of August 2001. And as the story broke, the military authorities began to give their reaction to it. And I was very alarmed at the way in which the military authorities sought to handle the matter. Throughout their interview responses in both print and in radio and television, the military authorities' line was, look, we don't know anything about this research. You know, Clonan never appraised us of his research. We never knew he was conducting this research, which was completely disingenuous in that I'd had written permission from them to conduct the research. They were also suggesting that my findings were false, that I had in some way fabricated them, that they could not possibly be true. And, I mean, throughout that week, I still made frantic efforts to maintain contact with my former colleagues, despite the very forceful rebuttal I was receiving from them. You know, I wrote, I indicated my willingness to meet the Chief of Staff at any point. Like, I went out of my way, naively in the belief that we could perhaps turn this thing around and deal with it in a more constructive fashion and that that would benefit everybody. But I found myself going from being at the heart of the organisation, being one of the guys, to being somebody who ought to be vilified, you know, in public. I spoke to a former colleague at the time, again a senior officer at DFHQ. You know, I rang him to ask him what was going on, and he said, "Well, look, Tom, in fairness," he said, "the organisation," he said, its back is up against the wall. And when we have our back up against the wall like that, you have to understand that character assassination is a legitimate tactic. And the words he used where he said, it's like in rugby, if you can't get the ball, you go for the man. So I was terrified. I felt I was completely out of my depth. All of that week, we were getting phone calls from the media, which I felt I had to respond to because my own reputation was on the line.
Well now, Dr. Clonan, the first report of your research, I think, appeared yesterday morning, and hard on its heels there was a Defence Forces press statement which says that the Chief of Staff rejects the reports which appeared yesterday.
Yes, well, I must say I'm puzzled and rather disappointed at the reaction of the military authorities. They seem to have rejected a report which they have not yet read.
It was extraordinary. Friends who had worked alongside Clonan in the press office just a year earlier were now briefing journalists that his claims were rubbish. On the Friday of that week, the Clonan family was due to go on holidays to France. But as the week progressed, the news story showed no sign of dying. Every national newspaper was running with it, and radio and TV confrontations with Clonan were getting more heated, not less. But on the Friday morning, an unexpected phone call brought the first prospect of a resolution.
I was at home visiting my parents in Finglas, my mum and dad, and I was there with my wife and our baby boy. We went to say goodbye to them because we were going to France on our family holiday that day. And my mobile phone rang. And my dad was giving out to me, saying, "Oh, you should be turning that thing off. You're going on your holidays." And he was giving it. But it was actually the Minister for Defence, Michael Smith. And I took the call. And in fairness to Michael Smith, I think he acted very appropriately throughout this episode. And he more or less said to me, "Look, you've highlighted these issues. What do you want me to do about it as the minister who's responsible?" And I asked him, I said, "Well, would you be prepared to have an independent investigation of my research and its findings?" So I was actually on a high after that telephone call. I thought to myself, I've just gotten an assurance from the Minister for Defence that we will investigate this. And I accepted those assurances. And, I had a spring in my step. So when I went to do the interview with the News at One, you know, I was very confident that matters would be amicable, that it wouldn't be confrontational or adversarial as it had been all week. But it was quite a heated exchange between myself and another member of the Defence Forces who repeated the assessment of, well, Clonan, he never told us about his research and he's concealing it from us and he's not giving us the information. And during that interview, I produced the letter from the Chief of Staff showing where I had been given explicit written permission and where I had been ordered by the Chief of Staff to lodge my doctoral thesis to the library in DCU. And I think, you know, when the lie about my, if you like, my motivation or my modus operandi, when that became obvious, there were a number of personnel at Defence Forces headquarters who were very, very angry with me at that point. And later that afternoon, as we drove out around the Red Car roundabout, and we were heading on the N7 towards Cork, and the phone rang, and the car was kitted out with a speakerphone, and it's a conversation that I will never forget for as long as I live. The phone rang. We were about 9 or 10 miles outside of Dublin, heading for Cork. My wife was in the back seat of the car. She was breastfeeding our young son. She was 4 months pregnant at the time. And we got this phone call from a staff officer at Defence Forces headquarters who said to me, what game do you think you're playing? And basically, again, the language, what the fuck do you think you're doing here? Stop the car, turn around, come back to Dublin. And the suggestion was that I should make some sort of public statement at that point, you know, to the effect that I wasn't telling the truth or that my findings were exaggerated or fabricated. And I said, this is absolutely preposterous. I can't believe you're speaking to me in this manner. And it continued. The abuse was saying, I'm giving you an order now. Do what you're fucking well told. And again, I was so long in the army and so immersed in that culture, that very, very hierarchical culture. I think most normal people would have just cut the person off. But I was so, if you like, cowed by that and coming from that background, I actually pulled over to continue the conversation. And there's a stand of trees on the left-hand side of the N7 as you're going south. I think it's just before Johnstown. And we sat there, you know, with the roof box in the car, going on. One moment we were going on a family holiday, and then we were confronted with this phone call. The conversation continued. He said, if you don't do what you're told, then, and the phrase used was, there's going to be guerrilla warfare. And every dirty trick in the book will be used against you, and it's your own fault. And you've opened up a Pandora's box for yourself, Clonan, and you've only yourself to blame. But that phrase, every dirty trick in the book will be used against you, you know, it just resounded in my head. My wife was very, very upset and said, turn it off, turn it off. Just cut him off. And I felt that I had to keep some sort of negotiation open with the military authorities. I felt that my own reputation was on the line. I was frightened. I was intimidated. So eventually I did. I said, look, I'm running out of power here. And I terminated the phone call. And at my wife's insistence, I actually turned off the phone. And my wife said to me, should we cancel our holiday? You know, should we just go back to Dublin? Because this thing is not going to go away. And I felt physically sick.
The Clonans did travel to France that Friday, but they had to monitor media coverage daily in their absence. The story was simply refusing to go away. And it wasn't just Tom Clonan who was paying the price.
However much pressure I felt I was under, I'm certain that women within the Defence Forces were under even far more, much more pressure. I was feeling particularly sorry for myself at the time, and I remarked to a former colleague, a female officer, you know, I think my ties with the army have now been severed, and I don't think I'll ever be able to go into the officers' mess in McKee Barracks in Dublin and go for a drink with the lads again. You know, I don't think I'll ever be welcome in there again. And I remember she said to me, well, you know, you've got a small taste of it. I've had to go in to my particular unit every day, every week, every month for the last, you know, 10, 12 years, knowing that I'm not really welcome. And I've had to put up with that. I think what she said was, you know, welcome to the club. And the latter part of that week, I think it might have been the Thursday, I got one phone call from a staff officer at Defence Forces headquarters who said to me, now, Clonan, he said, we've been out to DCU and we've seen your effing thesis. And they said, and at the back of it, there's this demographic profile. And we can see on it, you know, where you highlight, you know, the age of an interviewee, their rank, their marital status or whatever. The guy intimated to me that they would be able to identify perhaps two or three of the women by a process of elimination because it is such a small organisation. And he said to me, what we intend to do is we intend to interview these women. And actually, I received an email that week then from a former colleague, a female army officer, who said to me, well, you know, hi, Tom, thanks a heap. I was called in by my CEO today and I was asked, did you ever talk to Tom Clonan and what did you say to him? And she also said in her email, and you know, this is a year when I was hoping to be considered for promotion. So thank you a lot. I'm sure that was an experience that was replicated in other units.
For someone embarking on an academic career, this was hardly the ideal beginning. Public claims that his research was underhand and its results suspect were potentially devastating to his reputation. Before long, Clonan's new employer had called him in to explain himself. As the weeks wore on, the story did eventually drop out of the media, but for Clonan, on a day-to-day basis, the message was still being made very clear indeed.
On one occasion, I recall in September, we were walking down Grafton Street with our son in a buggy and my wife obviously pregnant, and I had you know, a former colleague, an army officer, walk up to me and confront me on the street. And it happened so quickly. He, you know, it was a beautiful sunny day. We were walking down Grafton Street, and my son at the time, he used to be very frightened of the puppets and the performers that you'd see on Grafton Street. And, you know, I was leaning down to talk to him about one of these street performers. Well, suddenly I got this tap on the shoulder, and I stood up, and there was this guy standing there in front of me, and he said, in front of my wife and my young son, you know, who the fuck do you think you are? And, you know, again, you know, you'll get your just desserts for what you've done. And it all happened so quickly, and, you know, he was gone. Again, we were absolutely, I mean, you have to try and explain to your son. And even to this day, my son will sometimes say to me, you know, is everybody in the army a bad man? And I have to explain to him, no, but there are one or two individuals there who, for whatever reason, I mean, I don't know what their motivation was, but I was very upset by it. We were very hurt. It was very traumatic for me and for my family. After this incident had happened, again, I got in contact with a former colleague who I thought would have influence to say, look, this behaviour has to stop. And when I told him what had happened on Grafton Street, he just laughed. He burst out laughing. And I haven't spoken to that man since.
The media was now showing less interest in the story, but behind the scenes, someone still had a bone to pick with Tom Clonan.
Around about the 6th of October, I remember it was a sunny Sunday, a normal day at home with the family. I got a phone call from Jim Cusack, who was with the Irish Times at that point. And Jim said, there's something I have here that's come into my possession that I think you need to have a look at it, Tom. So I drove down to his house and he showed me a document, a Defence Forces document, which had somehow found its way to the media. I think there were a number of other journalists who received this same document. Jim was quite taken aback with this particular document. And basically, the document contained repeated a number of allegations about me. And at this point, I just thought, you know, we needed help. Because basically, we were confronted with the apparatus of state. You know, so I went home to my wife and said, look, we need help. We need formal help. And so that's when we took legal advice, and we subsequently issued proceedings for libel and defamation against the Minister for Defence and the Chief of Staff.
It would take another 4 years for the case to come to trial. In the meantime, the Minister for Defence did set up an independent inquiry. In spring 2002, the inquiry vindicated Clonan's findings and issued recommendations similar to those in his PhD. The recommendations have since been implemented in full, and the Defence Forces is now used as a model for other organisations. But for Tom Clonan, those years spent preparing for the court case were not easy ones.
In the period 2001 to 2005, when the court case took place, I mean, my mum died of cancer, and one of the last conversations I had with my mum when she was in hospital, you know, she was worried about the court case, and, you know, she didn't want to talk about herself and her own situation. She was asking me, you know, don't be worried about your court case, you're doing the right thing. You know, it even got into that level of interaction with my own family. That's how traumatic this thing was for us as a family. Within a month of my mum dying, we had our own tragedy, and we lost a daughter, a little girl, Leighton, who died of a car accident. It was a stillbirth. And our son developed a neuromuscular disease. He's now bound to a wheelchair. So, you know, there was a lot going on in our life at that time. You know, so it wasn't an undertaking that we took lightly. And throughout that period, unfortunately, we were still being, you know, the subject of abuse from former colleagues in the Defence Forces. I'm sorry to have to say that, but that was the case. I think the misbehaviour at an official level certainly seemed to stop, but at an unofficial level, we were still subject to some very hostile remarks.
In May 2005, Clonan's libel case finally made it to court.
You know, throughout my military career, I've been shelled, mortared, shot at, nothing compared to the stress of being in court on that particular day. It was one of the most stressful things I've ever had to do. And you do relive or go through some of the events again very vividly. And in giving evidence about the phone call we had received on our way to France on our holidays, I recalled my wife pregnant, breastfeeding in the back seat of the car, and even hearing the evidence again brought her to tears in the courtroom. And I can't, my wife is a hospital consultant in psychiatry. She's not one given to displays of emotion. But I found it very therapeutic, very cathartic to stand up in court and tell the truth about what had happened to me. Going to court gave me the opportunity to stand up and to speak that into the record and to say it on the record.
In the end, the state made a financial offer to Clonan and, following legal advice about the risks and expense involved in continuing, he accepted the settlement.
I think what happened to me could have been avoided if there were proper formal processes in place for people who uncover wrongdoing. A whistleblower's charter, if you like. I think it would protect both the person who uncovers wrongdoing and the actual organisation or institution against whom such charges are laid. Like, the vast majority of my former colleagues in the Defence Forces are highly professional, upstanding, right-minded people who were as equally horrified about my findings in relation to bullying as I was. Well, unfortunately, I don't think my findings were ever communicated to the Chief of Staff. And as a result of the actions of two or three staff officers at Defence Forces headquarters, for whatever reasons they had, this matter went out of control and had very negative consequences for me, for the military authorities, and particularly for women within the Defence Forces. Now, that has been addressed, but I do think if there had been formal structures in place, if the Chief of Staff had been appraised fully of the situation, I don't think any of this would have happened, and I don't think I would have been in court, and I don't think I would have been due an apology as I am now.
Today, Dr. Clonan is the Irish Times security analyst and lectures in the School of Media at the Dublin Institute of Technology.